So, welcome back to the Birdie Bug Pod,
episode 56. Hey, we're back. And I think last time we were, you know, weirdly recording late night on a Friday, and this time we're weirdly recording in the middle of a Wednesday.
Yes, when you should be at work and you're not.
No, I did take the kit off. I haven't just run away. But it's really nice to be back. It does feel like it's been a little bit too long.
Always nice to be back to do an episode. We love it so much. And this one in particular, I'm going to love even more.
Yeah, so this is very much a you episode, but and anybody who's seen the title will know
that's not a female sheep, is it?
No. Well, it is.
Well, it is, but we're not doing an episode about female sheep.
No. But before,
is it sheeps or sheep?
Sheeps. but before, any catch-up, what have you been up to? Because it's been a little while since we've been here.
Yeah, not a lot. Weather's been a bit rubbish, but we've just spent a lovely weekend down in the Brecon Beacons where my other son, one of my other sons, I have many, obviously, three, to be fair, where my son lives with his girlfriend, and we had a fantastic time in Brecon Beacons. Oh, and dippers, Mav.
Didn't get a photo, though, did you?
No, I've never seen a dipper because I don't have them here where we live in Sussex. There's not many dippers about here. And was walking down this beautiful bit of river, and I saw a dipper. I only won, and it flew off, and I never saw it again, and I was a bit gutted.
Yeah, I was really looking forward to a nice dipper photo.
So I'm going to have to go back and camp out on that bit of river because there's a lot of dippers down there.
Yeah, that's where
apparently.
I saw them when I visited. It's lovely just to see them bobbing up and down on the river.
Beautiful little bird that I'm desperate to take a picture of. But at least I saw one. That's the first time I've ever seen one.
I was pleased because obviously I came back and was like, I saw three dippers, and I was really worried that you would then go and not see one, and I would have felt a bit bad.
Well, I'm a little bit miffed because you said when you were there, you know, when you were cold water swimming in there, that you saw two or three.
Yeah, and that one on that river just chilled with me while I was swimming. It was lovely.
This one didn't chill with me. It saw me and
should have got in the water.
Saw my big lens and then off it went.
Shouldn't have that out in public.
That one didn't think so, obviously. So, yeah, so that's about it for me for catch up. How
nice,
about you?
Nice species to tick off your lifer list, though. Yeah. I think in the last episode, the only bit of catch up I had was sort of preemptive. I said I was off to go and see some mushrooms. And obviously I have now actually done that. Went for a nice couple of walks in the New Forest with friend of the podcast, Josh. And we saw some lovely fly agaric, which it just makes for really fun photographic subjects because, A, they're brightly coloured and quite cool looking, but unlike insects, they don't fly away. So I can sort of have a little play around with the camera settings and muck about with stacking and things like that. So that was cool. And then we actually went back out the following weekend to find devil's fingers, which are a really quite bizarre looking mushroom that smell like something's died, but just really cool to see growing out the ground in the New Forest. So I've had a lovely...
You like a bit of fungi, don't you?
Yeah, we had a lovely time. Also, actually, you know, more relevant to the pod, although we have done a whole episode on fungi, I came across a wood cricket, which was really cool
and
to see.
And took a great picture of one.
Yeah, which I haven't posted yet, but I will do. But really cool to see because they're not super common. Mm. So that was a nice little treat when we were looking for fungi. But
fantastic.
So for a change, I have actually left the house and gone and done some photography.
Which is always a good thing. Okay, so today's episode, shall I give you a little clue?
Yeah, give you a little clue.
We are going to do an update. We did an episode, I think it was only the second episode we'd ever done, back in September 22,
I
think it was.
Yeah, a long time ago.
And it was literally our second episode, all about curlews and the plight of the curlew, just to bring awareness to the fact that they were struggling then. And we're now going to do a little update, probably really inspired by the fact that, and I think we mentioned in that episode this great organisation called Curlew Action, an organisation I'm very fond of, and I've now officially been asked to be an ambassador for
them. Which is really exciting.
Which I'm really excited about. It's only just been announced, so there's lots of work to do in the future, which we're just sort of talking about now. I've had my first meeting with them on Monday, and so excited, so honoured, so chuffed to bits, and just can't wait to get going. So
yeah, it's a really cool little update from you personally, and it's just a nice excuse to talk about bird that we both love. But to become an ambassador for such an awesome organization is just brilliant.
Yeah I'm honestly absolutely chuffed to bits about it. So
I know you've got, you know, at least one or two photos to share with
them. Yeah, I think I've already sent them a few actually, so that's good. So yes, I'm very excited about that. So on that basis, we are going to talk about curlews and just give a little bit of an update, because, say, we did this 3 years ago, and it'd be really good to give an update on the state of play for curlews. Some of it is bad, as you can probably imagine, and lots of it is good.
Yeah, so we'll do a little. We won't do too much on like the background of the Eurasian curlew, because if you want to, you can go back and listen to when we had different mics and we're probably a little bit more nervous. But you can go back and listen to our second ever episode to find out a little bit more of our sort of standard species for the curlew. But I will do a little recap, and then I will then probably be the one to touch on the sadder news.
Yeah, it'd be really good to give an update on why should we care.
Yeah.
Why should we care about curlews and you know, what's happening with them? I think it'd be a really good update as to why we've now been the only species that we're doing a second episode about.
For now, anyway.
For now.
So a really quick reintroduction. The curlew, or Numenius arquata. How are you saying it? Numenius?
Yeah, no, Numenius arquata, that'll do.
It's the largest wading bird in Europe. I found out a cool little fact, actually. So it was formally described by Carl Linnaeus, who was responsible for creating that binomial naming taxonomy that we use, the genus species. He was the person who came up with that system that we still use today, where every species has a genus and a species. So Numenius is the genus, arquata is the species. That system was developed by Carl Linnaeus,
and he was the
person. This wasn't its original name, but he was the person who formally described the
curlew.
That's
a great fact.
Which I thought was really cool. I like that. I was just reading up on curlews to get a little bit of a sort of refresher, and that popped up, and I was like, wait, hang on, I know that name. I learned far too much about him at one point, and so I thought that was quite a cool little tidbit.
No, titbit.
Not titbit.
It's a titbit.
Titbit. So one of the reasons why we originally did curlews as an episode is they are our most rapidly declining breeding bird species, or one of them. And they've seen a decline of almost sort of 50% since 1995. The Breeding Bird Survey report showed around about 50% decline in breeding curlews across the UK between 1995 and 2021. And that figure was larger than 50% in both Wales and Scotland, leading to it being on the UK Red List for Birds of Conservation Concern. And really crucially, the UK holds over a quarter of the global population of breeding curlew, and 30% of West European population spends the winter here. So our population is so crucial to the survival of just the global numbers of curlews. And as a response to these declines across the UK and Europe, curlew is now listed as globally near threatened on the IUCN Red List. So they are a species that continues to be and has been for a while in quite a lot of trouble. But it is one that we hold a real significant portion of. So it means if we can, you know, make sure that we look after our population, it really does benefit the global curlew numbers.
Yeah, and it's you know, the curlew is an indicator species as well, which means when things are bad for the curlew, they're also bad for many other species, ground nesting birds in particular. And so their decline is an early warning system of environmental and climatic changes that will have a sort of profound effect on other ground nesting birds. So, and that what you mentioned there about we hold 25% of the European nesting birds, and sometimes, you know, we get a bit complacent about that, because during the winter those numbers are boosted by the arrival of birds from northern Europe. So sometimes it can appear to be that we have plenty of curlews in this country. I mean, sometimes up to 150,000 that number will get boosted by in the winter, birds that come in from Scandinavia and Finland, and they mingle with the native birds, of which there's approximately about 66,000 breeding pairs in the UK. But of course, you know, in the winter we all go, there's lots of curlews about, aren't there? So it gives that false impression that things are okay for the curlew, and they're really not. So by the time those birds have gone back in the spring, you know, we're left with those breeding pairs here. And it's those breeding pairs, due to all of the things we've talked about so many times, are declining so dramatically, mainly changes in land use, intensification of agriculture, increase in predation, increase in forestry, improvement of land for agriculture, all those things that we know about that we've mentioned so many times, and we probably won't go over again.
Obviously,
but it's having a profound effect on brown nesting birds because they're losing their habitat for nesting.
Yeah, I was going to say, obviously, in the original episode, we covered their decline more sort of in depth, but any of the episodes that we've done that covers wetland species all very much applies to the struggle of the curlew. So, yeah, we won't go into that too much because I am aware of how many notes you have to cut through this episode.
Well, it's not too much. I think it's quite good to give an update on why they're declining so much, and it's a combination of so many things. For example, from sort of in the 60s, cows were fed on hay through the winter months. And by 1995, this was replaced by silage, which was growing grass and cutting it frequently, and so then stored under plastic sheets. And farmers found that they could then feed cows throughout the whole of the year. The soil was enhanced by fertilizers and pesticides, and they were growing and cutting fast-growing ryegrass every 3 weeks from April. And, of course, that's the crucial bit, which they weren't doing before. And, of course, that's the breeding time for ground nesting birds. And farm machinery just destroyed eggs and chicks indiscriminately. And so without new chicks coming through, populations declined, et cetera, et cetera. So, and then, of course, we've got to talk about climate change, wetter springs and summers, torrential downpours, frequent flooding, droughts, shifting of the seasons, which has a profound effect on all of those things that we know about.
For a real look at the decline of the curlew, you can go back and listen to our original episode.
And as a result of that, the sad bit is, which I know you're going to touch on now, is that one species of curlew has now officially, and I think it was only November 2024,
it was officially declared extinct.
Ah, okay. So I thought it was just recently that they've actually officially noted it. But sadly, a species of the curlews, of which I think there were 7 or 8, one has now been officially declared extinct.
Yeah, so that's the slender-billed curlew, which is Numenius, so is that genus name again, and then a much harder to say species name, which is Tenurostris, is what I'm going to go for. Yeah, so officially declared extinct in November 2024. It's a small curlew, more similar in size to our European whimbrel than our curlew, although it looks more similar to the European curlew. With a few little differences, they're slightly whiter on sort of breast, tail and underwing, shorter and obviously, given their name, a more slender bill. Their call is quite similar, but higher pitched, more melodic.
Melodic, I think.
And shorter. I wrote that because I liked that as a descriptor, then realised I actually didn't know what I was saying.
Or how to say it.
So essentially, scientists from the RSPB, BirdLife International, as well as quite a few other partners, they were the ones who confirmed the likely extinction because the last sighting in Morocco was 1995. They are now the first known global bird to become extinct from mainland Europe and North Africa and West Asia. And essentially, once the slender-billed curlew stopped returning to what was their crucial wintering sites at, there's so many words I can't say today, Merjah Zerga in Morocco. So that was their main wintering site. Really sorry if I butchered that place.
Sounded all right to me.
When they stopped sort of turning up, there was a huge effort and quite a lot of money to try and locate them on their breeding grounds. And this was up in Omsk, in Russia, which were home to
Omsk. Sounds good.
I'm gonna go with Omsk.
How else could you pronounce that?
Omsk. So that place, Omsk, was home to the only ever, this is solemn, only ever Sorry. Recorded breeding population of slender-billed curlews. And there were lots of expeditions and lots of area, or a large part of that area was sort of searched, and sadly just turned up nothing. On that breeding site, they raised their chicks in the bogs. They were quite prevalent between sort of 1905 and 1925, as they were not like a super rare species, and they were really perfectly adapted to the life in these sort of cold and wet conditions, which is, you know, quite far and quite north for a bird to go and breed. But by the sort of 20th century, a bit later on 20th century, they became one of the rarest birds across Europe and North Africa. And sadly, due to a lack of records, there's not a huge amount that's been confirmed or discovered about their behaviour or anything like that. So they're not super well understood. And the same goes for their quite rapid decline and loss. It's not really, and probably never will be, fully understood. It's thought that the pressures would be very similar to the problems our curlews are facing. So drainage of their raised bog breeding grounds for agricultural use, loss of coastal wetlands, which they use for winter feeding. They think hunting might have also played a part, but it's really quite difficult. Essentially, they are saying fragmented population was hit by changes in land use.
Actually, that hunting is something that really makes my blood boil. I was reading when I was doing this research that even as recently as 2014, 7,000 curlews and 120,000 lapwings were shot over France. Yeah. Which is just a staggering,
it's a huge amount.
Statistic, and heartbreaking to read those statistics, isn't it?
Yeah, and something that definitely can't be overlooked as a huge pressure.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
the actual, 100% confirmation of what caused the extinct of the slender-billed curlew is not known, but it's likely to be an accumulation of all the normal problems that these birds face. It's not the first of its family to go extinct. The Eskimo curlew, which is a shorebird that nested in the tundra of Canada, hasn't been seen with any certainty since 1963 and is also presumed extinct. And the reason why this is so crucial, apart from, providing an update on a European species, is that the pressures that have caused the extinction of these animals is very similar to what we assume is very similar to those that are facing our Eurasian curlew and the other relatives in the family. We've seen many valuable breeding habitats sort of disappear. And, well, you've already touched on a lot of the pressures they're facing. So it's a bit of a wake-up call. You like you say, over winter when we have all these curlews arrive, you think, oh, they must be doing brilliantly. But it was quite a quick decline for the slender billed curlew to go from not a rare bird to one of the rarest birds, yeah, and then declared extinct. So
yeah, and I've seen that firsthand when I was doing Brent geese surveying last year on RSBP Pagham Harbour. We were actually surveying wading birds as well, and the fields with the Brent geese and the lapwing were absolutely full of curlews. I was counting 80, 100 in a field at a time, and you think, wow, that's amazing to see. But of course, it is a false impression of how they're doing in this country, overall as a native bird here.
And so I feel like that will do for my little update on the sad side of the state of curlews, which is the loss of the slender-billed curlew. Like I say, they haven't been spotted since 1995. It's just been officially declared.
Yeah, I think
now.
The sad thing about that is we were, we touched on the fact that we did our first episode about curlews 3 years ago, and like we did in, I know that was probably our only second episode, but like we did in all of our, or have done in all of our episodes, we like to talk about hope and positive things. And here we are 3 years down the line and, one of them has gone extinct. Yeah. So, it takes a huge amount of effort to change things to the point where they have a huge effect. And
like I said, that the last sighting was a long
yes,
time ago.
That is
and
true.
Conservation efforts on these sorts of scale have definitely become more prevalent in modern times as we've recognised some of the struggles.
And there are definitely, I've got lists of projects and conservation efforts that are now going on. So I think the awareness is definitely growing. And that leads me on to Curlew Action, a charitable organisation that was started by Mary Colwell, who's just an amazing lady. We've listened to her talk at one of the events at Curlew Action a year or so ago in the New Forest.
Yeah, it was an incredible event.
Which was a great event. She's absolutely tireless in her pursuit of spreading the awareness for the plight of the curlew all over the world. I think she's currently out in Europe somewhere now doing a eulogy, actually, for the slender-billed curlew. She's an amazing lady. She's a writer, TV and radio producer and conservationist. And she decided to do a walk across the UK, well, starting in Ireland across the UK, when she found out for the first time that curlews had been placed on the red list back in 2015. And it made her feel so sad that she did this 500-mile walk, which wasn't just any random walk. It was a walk across all of those areas that curlews would have been prevalent when populations were high. And then wrote this amazing book called Curlew Moon, which I might have urged you to read it before. It's heartfelt. It gives you such a great insight into how things are changing and the effect it's having, not just on curlews, but all of our nature and wildlife across Ireland and the UK. So it's a fantastic book. So then she started the first ever World Curlew Day in April 2017, celebrating curlews across the world, and that World Curlew Day now goes on and is celebrated every single year.
Yeah, I think this year somebody did a huge walk, and I can't remember the distance now, but in a massive curlew outfit, like homemade, massive 3D curlew, and he did a huge walk to raise awareness. So it's become quite a well-known sort of day to celebrate and recognise the beauty that is a curlew and the problems that they face.
Yeah, and the whole mission, in fact, I'll read you their mission statement, giving curlews a secure future through advocacy, supporting conservation efforts, engaging with science and policy, highlighting the cultural importance of curlews, and by promoting natural history education. That is their mission statement. And that's a big thing. They're raising funds to support anybody interested in curlew conservation, from general public to farmers and landowners. And they do this by protecting nesting sites and promoting careful monitoring and research. And they are at the heart and centre of curlew conservation. Such a small organisation when you put it alongside some of those larger ones, but tireless and working so hard. 2021, singer-songwriter David Gray becomes Curlew Action's first patron. He's been fantastic.
We heard him as well, didn't we?
We heard him, and he, honestly, he's been on his world tour. He's talking about it on stage. He's imploring people to get involved and to help out. I know also that he donates some of the profit to his world tours to conservation. He's an amazingly proactive in that respect. So, you know, there are lots of projects. I don't know how many you've got.
Well, I've went into quite a lot of depth on one which actually isn't a Curlew Action one. It's an RSPB one. But it led into something that then Curlew Action are involved in, which is the launch of the Curlew Action Plan, which was launched this year on World Curlew Day. But that came about after the success of RSPB's Curlew Life project, which was a 4-year project aiming to halt the decline of curlews at 5 sites around the UK. It ran from October 2020 to December 2024, with a little bit of an extension into this year to complete a few things in Wales. And there were 5 main objectives. I won't go into all of it too much, but essentially it was to try and accept and communicate the urgent need for curlew recovery across the UK, extend effective protected areas, as well as trying to improve habitat and really monitor their decline and understand and address some of the real issues that they're facing. They worked across 5 sites, so one in Scotland, one in sort of Northumberland. I've put a spot in North Wales I can't pronounce. the Antrim Plateau, which is farmland in Northern Ireland, and Loch Earn Lowlands, also in Northern Ireland. And they're really important places. The 2 landscapes in Northern Ireland host over a third, which is 35% of the breeding population for curlews on the whole island of Ireland. The bit in Wales has up to 12% of the Welsh population, and the other areas were, again, real important regions for curlew populations in England and in Scotland as well. And they did all sorts of different things across these 4 years. They did habitat works, they created vital curlew habitats, they managed vegetations, created wetlands, removed scrub, replaced non-native trees, they tried to manage predation through temporary electric fences around nests and then permanent exclusion fences to protect the nesting birds. Lots of monitoring, from bird surveys to brood monitoring to habitat assessment and predator abundance surveys. They radio tagged chicks to then work out, you know, are these birds coming back to the same breeding sites? Are they moving to other territories? If chicks did die, they would be able to, you know, work out which nest they came from and try and work out sort of the cause of death. They also used the tagging to understand how the landscape could be improved even further. They did lots of ringing as well and just engaged a lot of communities. They had 5,800 attendees across 180 events. They spoke to policymakers and farmers and local people. They supported the RSPB's advocacy for giving farmers the advice and funding that they need to help curlews, as well as ensuring that future woodland planting and other types of development were done sensitively. So it was everything from boots on the ground, weapon creation, to citizen science and surveying, to lobbying the government to help protect curlews, make sure they are considered. So every level of concern across 4 years, they were working. And they had some fantastic outcomes. They saw increases in curlew abundance. They saw increases in hatching success. protecting the nests with defences, boosted the proportion of eggs hatching to an average of 95% during the 4 years, which was up from just 22% in 2020. Fledgling success was up. They massively increased the knowledge of curlew conservation. The one that I liked the most was that they found that curlew can respond if given the right conditions. Yeah. So they will bounce back if they are helped. And they also recognized the challenges that, you know, although curlews did respond positively, it didn't work everywhere. And it led them understanding that actually specific interventions have to be tailored to the landscape. So it's not a one size fits all. This is what curlews need in different regions and slightly different habitats. It takes
yes, we've talked,
time.
We've
to
talked
really
about that in the past,
it.
Haven't we, with other species yeah. about, you know, it's not just a case of, you know, letting something go wild. It has to be
really,
you know,
tailored.
Yeah, tailored to, we talked about it with turtle doves that need a particular scrubland. So it has to be tailored. It yeah. has to be considered. So,
but what was brilliant was the sort of conclusion was that a long-term approach is critical. It's not a short-term fix, which then led on to this curlew action plan, which I don't know whether you've got anything on the curlew action plan.
I haven't got it. I was going to talk about the curlew recovery partnership.
Oh yeah, I've got that as well,
which was launched in 2021, but I don't know if you want to finish.
Oh, yeah, I'll
what
finish
you were
it
doing
then.
There.
So the curlew action plan, I'd say, was launched on World Curlew Day, which is the 21st of April this year, and it's been facilitated by Professor Des Thompson, Susanna Rockett, with significant input and support from Mary Colwell yeah. as well, and yeah. lots of supporting organisations, the WWT, BTO, Curlew Action, and then loads of others that I haven't put in because there were plenty. But the action plan essentially is calling on government and agencies to support this urgent need to reverse the decline of curlew. It sets out key interventions, a lot of which have come off the back of this Curlew Life project. Government-funded support for nature-friendly farming is absolutely critical. They saw that through working with farmers and putting these interventions on farmland during that four-year project, what a massive help it was for improving hatching success and everything like that. So they've brought all the research they've done for these four-year projects that demonstrated how things like nature-friendly farm can help the struggling birds. And they're using that as a real way to sort of lobby for funding to support farmers. And specifically, the last thing I'll say is it sets out to deliver sort of collective action across six key areas. And that is accept and communicate the urgent coordinated action that is needed across the UK to establish a curlew recovery task force, which I thought,
I love
what
that.
A name.
That's a great name.
Extend effective protected areas, develop the existing curlew field worker toolkit.
That was developed yeah. by Mary, wasn't
that
it?
That was
the toolkit. I was going to mention that, which was obviously a toolkit just for you know, resources for field work, yeah. and
which is
a fantastic resource.
A lot from the Curlew Recovery Partnership.
Yeah.
The last two bits that they were looking at was to improve the understanding of and address the causes of high densities of predators that are then impacting things like not just curlews, but other ground nesting birds, and support the sort of evidence-based monitoring and research that's really crucial to understanding and reducing the decline of curlews across the UK. So I just really liked the fact that it was a four-year project, lots of research. They covered all sorts of different methods and covered all sorts of different angles. And off the back of that, they can take all the knowledge they gained, create an action plan and use that yeah. to lobby for better protection.
Yeah.
And I think I did see, because I was going to say, or we'll stick it in the link it in the show notes, that there's a petition to support nature-friendly farming, but they've absolutely smashed through 100,000 signatures, which is what's needed to get into Parliament. So I'll still put it in there.
Oh no, put
but
it
the,
in. Definitely.
The level of support has been phenomenal.
Yeah.
So I'll put it in there. I was going to say you need to help them get to, but they've absolutely smashed
and
through it.
And we've said before so many times that getting the farmers on board is key. You know,
yeah,
they are custodians of our land, and you know, so it is key.
Yeah, and curlew use their land massively,
yeah.
so it really is essential to them. And nature-friendly farming is something that's so important for so many, well, all of our species, really, and all of our habitats, and climate resilience, and all things like that.
And I think there's a real growing awareness of that as well. I
yeah.
think so many more farmers are getting on board and realising. What are you looking like that for?
I had my foot stuck in the cable.
Oh. I thought you were giving me a funny look.
No, I had my foot stuck in my headphone cable and it was tugging at my
ear. Okay. Anyway, so I'll talk about Curlew Recovery Partnership that was launched in 2021, chaired by Mary Colwell, my absolute hero. And the aim of the CRP, as we're going to call it, is to provide coordination and support to those engaged in curlew conservation, while also providing benefits for other threatened species and habitats and helping people to connect with nature. It's been set up with financial support from DEFRA, which is always a good thing, and will explore opportunities to embed curlew recovery within DEFRA's new Environmental Land Management Scheme and the Nature Recovery Network. So that was the whole directive, was to embed that within that plan. So that's really good. Again, chaired by Mary Colwell. I was going to talk about the Curlew Field Workers Toolkit, which you can find on the Curlew Action website. That was done in partnership with WWT and made it an accessible online resource for anyone requiring information or advice on field work on how to protect and obviously help the curlews. And then I can't ignore this ongoing campaign that she's had since 2011. This is Mary Colwell, for getting natural history education and spearheading the campaign for GCSE in natural history in schools.
Yeah, which I would have loved when I was at school.
And she's been, again, a tireless campaigner for that. I was talking to your mum about this, who's been a school teacher all of her life. And, you know, they always had wildlife ponds and they did pond dipping and they had areas of the school playing fields where they'd leave wild and they'd look at stag beetles. And I could be wrong, but a lot of that has declined and is not so prevalent in schools anymore. I could be wrong about that.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't do a huge amount of that at school. I think most of it I ended up doing at mum's school over school holidays. But we certainly had like field trips where we went and learned. One of like my earliest sort of introduction to ecology was a field trip that we did, and we did things like the catch and release method and the little, they're not really traps, but those tunnels that little mammals run through and leave footprints, so you can work out the number of like field mice. But that wasn't until maybe GCSE, I think, because we were still doing sort of like the population statistics and stuff like that. So it's relatively, and I know the natural history is meant to be a GCSE, isn't it? Yeah. So, but which means you start early on and try and get people really interested and connected to the
nature. What a fantastic thing that would be to actually get. I mean, I know these things take a lot of time.
Yeah, they always do.
I mean, she started campaigning for that in 2011, so these things take time. But I think it's not far off.
Yeah, just going back ever so slightly to the Curlew Recovery Partnership, I just thought I'd mention it's a group of organisations that include obviously Curlew Action, but also the RSPB, BTO, WWT, Curlew Country, and a few others. And when you go onto Curlew Action's website and, you know, want to get involved in surveying, it sends you over to the Curlew Recovery Partnership page, because there is an email that you can contact if you want to get involved in curlew surveying and monitoring. And they have a lot of options for people who have never done anything like that, all the way up to quite experienced bird sort of surveyors. So whatever the experience, if you want to get involved in curlew monitoring, they have a contact information. And then obviously all the toolkit information stuff that we've mentioned. But it's nice to know that if people really feel passionate and want to get involved in,
yeah, you can go. They run field trips where you can go and learn how to ring curlews and, you know, all that stuff. Curlew chicks, obviously. So there's another thing called the Curlew Recovery Project. Eastern England is sort of home to one of the largest remaining populations in lowland England, where curlews often favour the extensive expanses of semi-natural grassland habitat present on airfields.
Oh, okay.
This is something I didn't know about, and obviously, due to airstrike risk from birds, eggs from nesting curlews have historically been destroyed under licence on many airfields. So now what they're doing, this Curlew Recovery Project, is they collect eggs from airfields, captive rearing and release into the wild. So what they do is that it's like head starting.
Yeah, which I think we spoke about in a few. Dove episode had a lot of head starting, didn't it?
Yeah, and this has been hugely successful. So far, 312 eggs collected from airfields and 208 total curlews have been released from this project. So that's a fantastic one. And this one also overlaps going into the Dartmoor Recovery Project. It's a similar thing. And those eggs from RAF runways in East Anglia, again, east of England, which were being removed to protect the aircraft, they're now being reared in and released in Dartmoor, head started in Dartmoor. That's been hugely successful. The project on Dartmoor, which was started in 2021, and that particular year, 33 young curlews were reared and successfully released on Dartmoor. In 2022, 27 curlews were released. Haven't got any updated figures for the subsequent years, but that project is still going on. And the population in Dartmoor got so low, so that now is working really well. And farmers, we're talking about farmers, commoners and landowners have been the key part of the success of this work, enhancing and maintaining habitats. So exactly what we were saying earlier on is that get the farmers on board with this land that they manage, you know, and that is such a key part of it.
It will be crucial to keeping their numbers from getting any lower and hopefully only seeing them go up.
Yeah, and the Dartmoor Project is the only upland head starting initiative in the UK, and what we learned from it would be very valuable, it says there. So there's another one south of England, Curlew Recovery Project. They're taking eggs hatched up in North Yorkshire collected. They're collected from vulnerable curlew nests, so ones that are under threat up on the moors up in Yorkshire. They've been collected and they're transported down into south of England, so which I find fantastic because obviously I'm in the south of England. There are three sites that they're doing, three locations, one of which is quite close to me, Elmley Nature Reserve. And spring 2025, since this started, this third year of the project to help restore curlews. And over the last 2 years at Elmley, they've fledged 50 curlews with 10 GPS tracked with leg tags and flags. And they're doing really well. Yorkshire Dales Curlew Recovery Project, lots of work going on there. Very similar to what you were saying earlier on. GPS tracks 17 adult curlews to better understand the habitat use and breeding success on farmlands in the Dales. They're testing two novel farmer-focused wader monitoring methods to better measure the impact of curlew threats and conservation interventions. There's a lot of study and monitoring going on. They're providing farmers opportunities to help shape and co-develop ideas for future curlew agro-environmental scheme options in the Dales and similar landscapes to ensure these are co-developed by farmers, for farmers. So loads of work going on up there.
This is what I'm finding
heartwarming is, you know, we did that 3 years ago and now we are reeling off these projects that are going on.
Yeah, because, and birds released and eggs protected.
You know, Ireland in particular, Ireland, nowhere has there been more severe decline of curlews than in Ireland. 97% decline since the 80s. Again, intensive agriculture changes. A lot of peat extraction has changed the environment over there. And at one stage, I think in the 80s, they were counting 5,000 breeding pairs of birds in Ireland. It dropped down to 123 left.
Massive, isn't it?
And, you know, it was pretty desperate to the point where the extinction was a very real possibility in Ireland. However, Curlew Life Project, which obviously you alluded to, RSPB Northern Ireland, is delighted to announce a turnaround with record numbers of chicks fledged for this endangered species due to a huge amount of recovery work and the dedicated RSPB and local farmers working in partnership with Curlew Life Project. That four-year project, as you were alluding to, and I think you even mentioned the Antrim Plateau.
Yeah, well, that was one of the sites of the project.
Yeah, remarkable increase in breeding population, which jumped from 37 pairs up to 52 pairs, and this is continuing to do. It's an incredible improvement since 2020, even since 2020, and there's so much work going on, and that's so good to...
Yeah, it's all that's so lovely good to hear, read. Isn't it? Especially, like I say, after always... We always talk about decline, and we've obviously spoken about the loss of the slender-billed curlew, but to see such an effort across all sorts of different regions of the UK and Ireland to have people out there just campaigning and working and habitat restoring to try and get the curlews sort of recovering and certainly at least to halt their decline as well. So,
and another one that was that's now quite close to my heart because I've just come back from Wales and just come back from the Brecon Beacons, which has now had the name change to Banau Brachniog.
Well, you say change,
National
you mean
Park.
Go back to the Welsh name.
Yeah, go back to the Welsh name. But the population in Wales, curlew population has fallen by 81%, continues to fall by 6% annually, and the prediction of country-level extinction is threatened by 2033. So this Banau Brachniog National Park, Brecon Beacons National Park, is part of a partnership which has received support from Welsh Government through the National Heritage Lottery Fund, which has taken action to prevent the extinction of curlews across Wales. And £1 million has been announced to fund curlew recovery in three key areas across Wales. One of them actually is Langorse Lake, which obviously is close to our heart because that's where Abman lives, isn't it? my son and your brother. So there's a huge amount of work being done there as well, lots of funding. So, you know, I'm so pleased to be able to mention all of these projects.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
That are now ongoing, because the awareness, which is something I'm going to be working on very hard now with Curlew Action, to create awareness, and that's what it's all about. And there are lots of little events. I don't think I'm allowed to mention too many of them because I actually haven't got full details, but lots of events going on through 2026.
I'm sure we'll give them all a share.
Which we'll give you an update on with Curlew Action. Lots of plans, particularly for World Curlew Day in April, and other such things, which I will say give you an update on.
I've got a few little actions for people that they can do to help curlews as well. If all of this has made you just want to go out there and make sure the curlews are doing okay. One of the big ones, this is particularly important around the breeding season, but just obviously be very mindful when you visit nature reserves or areas where curlews and wading birds nest. If you have dogs, keep them on leads. There's likely to be big signs up letting you know that there are breeding birds in the area. So it's just being mindful and very respectful. Of course, as I spoke about earlier, support petitions that encourage things like nature-friendly farming, I will stick that link, but there are, just keep an eye out essentially for campaigns from Curlew Action, the RSPB, WWT, all of these organisations. If you see anything about, well, any of them, but obviously in this context, if you see any relating to curlews or wetland birds or farmers, then make sure you give them the support, because the support is so crucial for the work that they do.
Yeah, and that can be through volunteering and citizen science and monitoring.
Yeah, just signing the petitions as well. If you want to go a step further, of course, you can. There's a whole page on Curlew Action's website. If you want to fundraise for them, go and, I don't know, do a marathon or something cool and raise some money for curlews. Do it in a big curlew suit if you want to go the extra mile. or simply, you know, you can always donate to these organisations and make sure, like I say, all of them are fantastic, but Curlew Action particularly are at the heart of a lot of this work, and they are comparatively very small, so any support just goes a really long way to helping them do the incredible stuff that they do.
Yeah, and if you've never heard the call of a curlew, it's a good time of year to do that now. Lots of those overwintering birds are coming in to mingle with our native birds here, sit on a salt marsh, flask of tea, listen to curlews. It doesn't get any better than that. I honestly, it really doesn't. So yeah, sit on the side of a nature reserve and listen. Such a great sound.
It is lovely.
It's one of nature's greatest sounds.
And yeah, obviously, if you want to learn lots more, please do bear in mind that we were much newer to the world of podcasting and we didn't have quite such fancy mics, but do go listen to our second ever episode. And before we ended, I just wanted to ask you one question. I wanted to know what it was that drew you to curlews, because for as long as I've known you, your love around birds was always quite bird of prey centered. Yes. Always owls and falcons, kestrels, where he is a falcon. And I want to know what it was that made you so interested and passionate about curlews.
I think it's that call that got me completely hooked. When your mum and I were walking RSPB Pagham Harbour when I first got into bird photography, and we loved the place so much, and so we would literally do that. We 5-6 o'clock in the evening on a summer's evening, we'd go and take a flask of tea, and we had this bench, particular bench that looked out over the salt marsh, and this sound of the curlews was just. It was just so beautiful and haunting, and so then I got into photographing them and realised what a beautiful bird they are. And then of course I started reading about the plight of the curlew, and that kind of led on to the whole conservation awareness for me, that just how you know, bad things have got. And it's that sound, it's the sound of the curlew. It's almost like they're calling out to us to help them, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
So I got totally obsessed by curlews, and
just
such a beautiful bird.
If curlews were the sort of springboard that then led to all your citizen science stuff, they've done a good job at leading you to citizen science and conservation.
They definitely were. It led on to me then becoming an RSPB ranger and doing my BTO wetland bird surveys and monitoring Brent geese and wading birds at Pagham, and the joy of seeing them.
And now you also have a tattoo on your arm of one.
I do.
Very dedicated to the world
of curlews. I've
got
curlews everywhere in my house. Even my key rings from my front door is a curlew. Seriously.
It's amazing to see what impact a species can have on someone, because everybody will have an animal they're particularly fond of.
Yeah.
When you look at the number of people who are fundraising or passionate about curlews, it's amazing to see the impact that nature can have on people and what passion they can ignite in us, which is just so important because we need that passion to look after them. But I think it also is crucial for recognizing our connection to nature as well, because they clearly have an ability to make us feel something.
Yeah, and I think it is that connection. It's also that connection to make you realize that we need to do something. And I think the curlew is an absolute, we're going to talk about ambassadors. The curlew is an ambassador for that, for making us realize that we have to protect our nature and our wildlife and our habitats. And it's so important because, you know, I read when I first started reading about curlews, and they were saying, you know, within 15 years we'll have no curlews in this country unless we do something. And the person that was writing that article was saying, just, I can't imagine a world without the sound of the curlew. It kind of resonates.
Especially when also you get used to, like you say, over winter, these nature reserves, seeing masses of them. Yeah. The idea that site won't be there anymore is a real, it's a really good reminder of the
I mean, don't get me wrong, I still love birds of prey. I love all birds because I'm a passionate bird photographer. We're sitting here in curlew t-shirts. But there's something about the curlew that
I have a real love for cormorants. They do something that just, I absolutely love seeing them. There's always a species.
I implore you to go and walk a nature reserve and listen to curlews, because honestly, it'll hook you as well. And maybe you will be someone who will, campaign and fight and volunteer and help the curlew. And then helping the curlew, as I said, they're an indicator species. If we can protect the habitats that curlews thrive in, we're protecting a whole raft of wildlife that goes with that.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing.
It's always a good thing. I mean, we've got lots of wetland species that we've covered, which normally means that they're struggling. So it's a hugely important thing. But yeah, there you go. That's our little update on the curlews.
We sort of raced through a lot of the projects because there's so many,
but that's a great thing. Obviously, the sad extinction of the slenderbill, but hopefully that is sort of offset now by the absolute wake-up call that hopefully it's ignited in everyone to really make sure that we don't lose any more curlews. And it is phenomenal to be able to have so many projects that we have to race through them.
Well, I'm not going to apologise for the fact that now I am an official curlew action ambassador. There will be a raft of curlew stuff on my social media, so watch out for that.
And for now, obviously, please do check out all the links that we stick in the show notes. Find out more about curlews, find out more about the work going on, support it if you can. And even if it's just sharing the messaging across social media or chatting to people about them, or just going and seeing them yourself, do find us on Instagram at the Birdie Bug Pod. And I think that's probably about it. So thanks for listening.
Thanks very much for listening. Let's say it's a subject that we're passionate about, very close to our hearts, and we hope you enjoyed the update.
We'll catch you next time.
Catch you next time. Thanks very much.